It's 9:06.
From New Hampshire Public Radio, I'm Laura Kanoy, and this is The Exchange. The New Hampshire House won't vote until the end of the month on expanded gambling, but in the build-up to this decision, House lawmakers this week got an earful from constituents on the gambling bill before them, which would allow one so-called high-end, highly regulated casino. On the pro side, lawmakers heard from businesses like the New Hampshire Speedway, who had supported more gambling opportunities, feeling it's unfair that just one location and one company would win the casino license. On the anti-side, the owner of the New Hampshire Fisher Cats baseball team joined leaders of other major entertainment venues who've publicly worried about coexisting with a casino and competing for the same customers. But while gambling grabs headlines, it was the state Senate this week that did much of the heavy political lifting as it slogged through the details of the state budget. At the same time, senators voted on a slew of House-passed bills on issues from gun rights to private prisons. Today in The Exchange, it's our Friday New Hampshire News Roundup, and we'll catch up on the top stories of the week. Let's hear from you, too. What are some of the topics that have been front and center in your mind this week? What do you want to know more about from the news stories you've heard, whether the latest debates on gambling in the House or what the Senate might do with the state budget? Give us a call. Tell us what you think. The Exchange number, 1-800-892-6477, 1-800-892-NHPR. Send us a short email, the address, exchange@nhpr.org. You can also post a comment on our Facebook page. We have two guests with us in studio. Norma Love is here, State House reporter for the Associated Press. Norma, thanks for being here.
Good morning, Laura.
Also with us, Gary Reno, State House reporter for the New Hampshire Union Leader and the New Hampshire Sunday News. And Gary, welcome back. Good to see you, too.
Thank you.
Well, and I'll start with gambling, because even though this is a couple weeks away, boy, Norma, seemed like a lot of people were talking about that this week.
Well, you have three subcommittees, the House Ways and Means and House Finance Committees created a joint committee. And then they broke into three subcommittees, one on revenues, one looking at regulations, and one on the community impact. And I think it's really interesting to see who's coming out now to look at.
Lots of new voices.
New voices. The Fisher Cats is afraid that they will be impacted by loss of the same dollars. There's one pool of dollars in a certain radius, and the entertainment money that the Verizon Center is coming out saying, well, couldn't you limit the casino to 1,500 seats? Then you have places like the Capitol Theater saying, wait a minute,
the
Capitol Center for the Arts, and also you have places similar in Keene, the Music Hall in Portsmouth, the Lebanon Opera House. They have small venues, 700 to 1,300 seats. Well, 1,500 seats wouldn't help them. So they're worried that when you have a big casino with lots of money, that they can go out and say, all right, Beyonce or Elton John or whoever, you're asking bid minimum is $750,000, and that's what the Verizon Center said they could pay an Elton John. And a casino will say, well, we'll give you $1.2 million.
Come to our place.
Yeah, come to our place. We don't really care if we sell out our tickets because we want the people to come here to gamble.
Well, so Gary, but gambling supporters, and I've talked to Senator D'Alessandro and many others right. over the years, they always say, no, there isn't this cannibalization that these folks are worried about.
Well, I mean, we've heard that too when the Verizon Center opened, there won't be cannibalization. But, I mean, they still drew a lot of the same people that, like, the Whittemore Center was using in UNH and Dartmouth and so on. So it does happen. I mean, and you can't expect it not to happen. The question is how large an entertainment facility you're going to be allowing them to put in there. Are you going to allow them really to directly compete with some of these other people? And one of the people that they heard not last week but a couple of weeks ago said, you can control that. You can set that up so that they can't compete with the people that are already here. And so whether they want to do that or not and get that far into the details, that's the question.
How powerful are these voices, Norma? How much will they be listened to at the House as House members try and make this decision?
Well, I think, for example, the Capitol Center, that was a community effort to refurbish that center and create a vibrant entertainment facility which As Nikki Clark, who's their executive director, said, counts on maybe 3 to 4 top shows like a Bill Cosby every year to be the draw. And then they use the money to subsidize a lot of other activities. And when they're full, restaurants in town are full, a lot of business happens, you see people walking up and down that part of town. And I'm sure you could hear the same arguments from the other small communities. I won't say small, but Portsmouth, Keene, and Lebanon. But if you get into these casino dollars, they have buying power that these places simply don't have. As Nikki Clark told the committee yesterday, 26 of the there's not that many tours anymore, and 26 of the groups that she tried to get in the last 2 years went to Connecticut.
To Monhegan Sun.
Right. They just couldn't bid for them.
Another element that came out this week that I didn't know that much about, actually, Gary, so maybe you can enlighten me and everybody else, how much charity gambling there is here in New Hampshire, and those folks are worried about a casino, too.
Of course they are. It's a very lucrative business. It's amazing. I mean, somebody last week said, we do have casino gambling here, and we do have, you know, all the stuff that we're worried about in this bill. And it's called charity gambling. And there's some two huge places in Manchester that do this all the time. And they just run one charity in and the next charity out. Charities are limited to 10 days a year. So they're kind of tight in terms of how much they can do. And their concern is that they may be bumped out if the casinos come in, because there's no reason these big operations, and there are about 10 of them around the state that do the charity gambling, that they might lose out. Some of these might close, and these charities will be closed out of the market.
There are only 10
yeah,
of them.
Go ahead,
I mean, there's 10 right now. They come and they go, but there's 10 places they can go. So if you figure 10 charities, that's what, 37 per location? And if the 10 charities, there's a waiting list at some of these places. Now, Ed Callahan, who's the general manager at Rockingham Park, which is one of the potential sites for a casino, said that maybe they could do one day at each of the at the casinos and at the casino, and that would give those places enough, 3 or 4 times the money they would get at some of these smaller venues. The charities under the bill are protected if they participated in games of chance in 2012. If they continue, if they stop or their place closes and they're locked out and they can't run a one-day event, then they lose that grandfather provision.
Completely.
Completely.
Wow. All right. A couple more questions here, but I also want to invite our listeners to join us because this is real interesting. Our phone number here in the exchange is 1-800-892-6477, 1-800-892-NHPR. It's our Friday New Hampshire News Roundup today on the exchange, and we want your thoughts on some of the big news items of the week, whether it's these new elements coming into the gambling debate. Later on, we'll talk about what the state Senate is doing with the state budget. Join us with your questions, comments, and thoughts about the news items that caught your ear this week. 1-800-892-6477. Email is exchange at nhpr.org. Again, 1-800-892-6477. And Norman Gary, here's an email that just came in on gambling. This is from Matthew in Dover. He says, venues around the state may be worried about losing business, but won't a casino provide more state revenue than, say, the Music Hall in Portsmouth? As a state, we need more funds, says Matthew in Dover. Thanks, Matthew, for the email. This is the argument on the other side, Gary.
Yes, and it's really hard to discern. I mean, obviously, an event at the Music Hall in Portsmouth brings in a lot of people to Portsmouth. They stay there. They eat there. You get the rooms and meals taxes. But it's a little harder to quantify than what a casino will provide. They probably will make more money that way. But the other side of it is, if you're going to keep losing these businesses, you're also going to start losing revenue through the meals tax and various other taxes.
This is the argument that Governor Hassan's been making, Norma, that the state needs the money to fund services from mental health to roads.
I think it really depends on, we're all one group of taxpayers. It really depends on what you want to support and what incentives you want. Because if you put incentives out there for a music hall or a capital center or something like that, something that creates a downtown for a community or brings in people to a community, that's one kind of incentive. If you want to have a casino, And the casino draws people from around to gamble, to maybe the small, maybe they have shows, maybe they won't. That's another kind of incentive. The fear is that it will be taking all, it's like a straw into a pool of revenue, and it's sucking it all out. People only have,
who's at the other end of that straw?
Right. People only have so much. And the there is supposedly, the further away from a casino you are, the less likely you are to drive there, unless it's a Foxwoods or Mohegan Sun, something with a lot of entertainment, a lot of amenities. The argument was made in committees this week that what New Hampshire's looking at is more like a convenience casino, something that—
Because it's smaller
it's
than
smaller,
what they're talking about in
Massachusetts. It's smaller. It will be close. If you're within 30 miles or 30 minutes, you'll come there. Well, that is a whole different— people aren't going to fly into Manchester to go to a casino at Salem or Hudson like they are maybe to Boston. That was what was said in committee today.
Well, and we had that email from Matthew in Dover saying, hey, the state needs the revenue. Here's another email on the other side from Christopher in Manchester, who says, in addition to the cannibalization and charity gaming issue, we're starting to hear more about the addiction issue. Christopher asks, is it all a perfect storm to come down against the governor's bill in the House? And, of course, this is the big question, Gary.
Well, it is. I mean, it's all being set up in a lot of different ways. It's got so many angles to it at this point. It's hard to figure out which one is which. But, yeah, I mean, there's a question about the addiction. There is some money set aside in terms of the state or the tax that the state will get. Some of that money is set aside for gambling problems. And it's the first time that the state has ever spent any money on that, even though there people would say that there's plenty of people out there that have problems.
Already. That's the case Governor Hassan has made. I'm interested in his question, though. He's saying, is there a perfect storm against this bill in the House? I just wonder what you think,
well,
Gary. You've watched these bills come and go.
It was always going to be an uphill fight. I mean,
the
House has never, ever approved any expanded gambling like this. And it looks like the way things are happening now in terms of the state revenues and various other things, it's not helping the bill's cause.
All right, and let's talk about state revenues after a break, because there was some news there this week. Thanks for that email, Christopher, and you too, Matthew. We'll take your calls and emails after a short break, 1-800-892-6477. Email exchange at nhpr.org. We'll be right back.
This is NHPR 919. Good morning. NHPR is a place for breaking news throughout the day. It's a place for great radio about New Hampshire's news and culture, national politics, and international relations. It's a place for unique videos and photos, new and interesting music, and for events around the state. There's always something more at nhpr.org. Support for NHPR comes from UR members M. Frum, the League of New Hampshire Craftsmen Retail Galleries in Center Sandwich, Concord, Hanover, Littleton, Meredith, Nashua, and North Conway. Information at nhcrafts.org. From Rothwinkel Dental Care in Bedford, comprehensive family and cosmetic dentistry devoted to restoring and enhancing the natural beauty of your smile. Information at rothwinkeldentalcare.com. And from our Leadership Circle donors, including Carolyn and Peter Mertz, and Cyrus and Barbara Sweet. This is NHPR.
This is The Exchange. I'm Laura Kanoy. Today in The Exchange, it's our Friday New Hampshire News Roundup, and we're talking about some of the top stories that Granite Staters were talking about this week, from the gambling debate ongoing in the House. We're going to turn our attention now for a few minutes to budget and revenues in the state Senate, and later on, some big political news here in New Hampshire. Let's hear from you, too. 1-800-892-6477. 1-800-892-NHPR. Email exchange at nhpr.org. You can also post a comment on our Facebook page. Our guest for the hour, Norma Love, State House reporter for the Associated Press. Gary Reno, State House reporter for the Union Leader and New Hampshire Sunday News. And joining us now for this segment is Michael Brindley, newscast producer and reporter here at NHPR. And Michael, thanks for carving out the time for us.
No problem. We appreciate it.
And Gary, just before the break, you talked about the revenue picture and you said something that I want to pick up on. You said there's some news about revenues this week that makes the gambling bill look less forceful, if I could put it that way. What's going on?
Well, the gambling bill looked very good when the state really needed the revenue from it. Now, the last 2 months, which are the two biggest months that the state has in terms of revenue for the year, March and April, have come in very strong. April's revenues were $50 million almost over estimates for the year.
Wait, 55 million over?
Almost, 48 point something.
Wow.
Now, a lot of that is almost $30 million of it is one-time money, which comes in through the tobacco settlement, second tobacco settlement, and through the MBTE settlement as well.
Well, but the MTBE settlement isn't a done deal. They're appealing that. No one knows if Exxon's going to cough it up.
They've gotten some of the money in from the earlier agreements with some of the others.
I see.
And they get 10% for the cost for the litigation, and that's what they're booking, about $6.4 million of that.
So an improved revenue picture, Norma, means a diminished picture for gambling's chances in the House.
Well, I think the House produced a budget that it felt was not that great for the Democrats who wanted to spend more on some items, but it wasn't bad. It wasn't horrible. It wasn't like the last 2 years where there was a lot of deep, deep, deep cuts. And they passed it to the Senate without any gambling money in it. And I think that took a little of the steam out. So if now revenues are starting to come in stronger, what you end up with is this is 13, fiscal year 13. If you have a stronger year this year, what they do is it bumps up their estimates for 14 and 15. So going forward, there is a good chance the House is going to say, you know, I don't know that we need this.
Here's another email. This is from Alice in Warner. She says, doesn't the bill call for a commission to look at the economic impact and recommend other potential sites? Why do we keep calling the bill one casino? Alice, it's a great question. And Norma, this came up this week, too. There were some businesses. We talked about those who were concerned. There were some businesses who said, it's not fair that we only have one site. We want in on this, too.
Well, I think that the concern is that the governor, is saying one high-end, whatever that is, highly regulated casino. But most people don't believe that it's going to stop there. The opponents say proliferation is going to happen. You're going to have the New Hampshire Motor Speedway that says, hey, we want to have something. Or you're going to have another site in New Hampshire say, this isn't fair. We want something. And maybe we'll start with one, but maybe in a year or two or three, the opponents say other states have seen that it becomes an addiction of its own in terms of revenue.
Well, one thing's certain. We'll be talking about this again, for sure, in other roundtables. And I want to turn to another issue that was just huge this week here in New Hampshire news. And Michael, to you on that, if you could, please. U.S. Senator Kelly Ayotte got criticized, got praised this week, got a lot of national press, Michael, for her vote against expanded background checks. Now, lots of other senators voted against this. Why so much attention on Senator Ayotte?
Well, I think it comes from the fact that she's the only one in New England that voted against it. And so it created kind of a target. And as you may have seen, the daughter of the Sandy Hook principal who was killed did attend the town halls in Warren and Tilton. I was at the one in Tilton, and it was pretty testy for a town hall meeting. Usually don't see quite such a large crowd. But I would say, you know, supporters, if not, you know, the same, maybe more, came out in favor of Kelly Ayotte. And there were obviously several opponents as well. And so during the town hall meeting, you heard a lot of applause on both sides. It was very heated, but at the same time, it was cordial. I mean, people weren't, you know, yelling at each other, but it was definitely a lot of debate going on among the people outside about her vote and inside as well.
Why Senator Ayotte, Gary? What do you think? Like I said, national media has focused on this. I mean, NPR has done stories. Other national newspapers have done stories. Why on her? There are other people who voted against this as well.
Well, she's an up-and-coming senator, for one thing, a woman and a Republican. The other is her background. She's an attorney general. So most people would expect attorney generals to be in favor of gun control.
Oh, because law enforcement. Okay.
The chief law enforcement officer in the state.
Norma, what do you think? I read one national article that said gun control groups were targeting moderate Republicans, and they included Senator Ayotte in that. But here in New Hampshire, from what I understand, Kelly Ayotte isn't considered a moderate, didn't run as a moderate in 2010, hasn't voted as a moderate in Congress. So again, why the attention on her?
I think that a couple of things. One, she is a conservative. I think she would agree that she's a conservative. I think that she has been put out front with the Marco Rubios as the young face of the Republican Party. And she, as Gary pointed out, was a former attorney general. I don't think she made her intentions known until late in the game as to what she was, how she was going to vote.
I see. So that kind of heightened the speculation.
Heightened the speculation. She gave a speech at the convention. I mean, she and some of the other younger Republicans have been really touted as the face of the party. I wonder how much impact this is going to have because her reelection isn't for 3 years.
You know, radio ads have been playing, brought out by national groups, playing here in New Hampshire, both in favor of Senator Ayotte's vote and against. I want to play just a little bit for everyone from these ads, and then we'll talk about the message that they're trying to send.
Is not just a senator, she's also a mom. She knows the only way to prevent tragedies like Sandy Hook is to fix our broken mental health system. And it's why Kelly had the courage to oppose misguided gun control laws that would not have prevented Sandy.
It didn't take long for her to go Washington. It says here, Ayotte voted against improving background checks to keep guns out of the hands of criminals.
Are you serious? 89% of the people in New Hampshire support universal background checks.
So that first ad paid for by the National Rifle Association, and the second ad paid for a group called Americans for Responsible Solutions, which is the group set up by Gabby Giffords, the former congresswoman who was involved in a shooting as well. What do you think the impact of those ads is going to be, Michael?
It's hard to say. As Norma said, the reelection isn't up for another 3 years. But obviously, you know, Sandy Hook is part of this conversation. And the way Senator Ayotte responds when it does come up is that a background check wouldn't have necessarily at all prevented Sandy Hook the tragedy. And so she wants to focus more on mental health, on strengthening current background check laws. And that's how she responds. And so the effect of the ads, it's really unclear. Obviously, everybody has their side that they feel that they're strongly about. So it really depends on where things go with the reelection.
I've got a couple emails here that I want to share with you. And I also want to remind you that our phone number here for you to join us on the roundtable is 1-800-892-6477, 1-800-892-NHPR, email exchange at nhpr.org. I can't read all of these because there's a lot, but here's one from Jerry in Nashua who says, first of all, I'm a gun owner, and I even own several of what are popularly called assault weapons. With this as a background, I have a question. If in excess of 80% of the New Hampshire electorate supports expanded background checks, and we elect our legislators to represent their constituencies, what constituency does Senator Ayotte claim to represent? Now, Senator Ayotte obviously isn't here to answer that question, but what do you think about this idea, Gary Reno, of polls showing what New Hampshire people want?
Well, I mean, this is always the argument. You know, do you represent the people, or do you go down there and you represent somebody else? And you know, we also elect these people to make informed decisions because we're not going to be able to have the kind of information that they're going to have. But ultimately, I mean, it gets down to a whole question of who are they answerable to? Who are they going to be answerable to? And 3 years, she's going to be coming up for election again. And if people are upset about it, that's the time to do something.
3 years is a long time in politics, as you know.
It is. It's an awful long time. And right now, I mean, she was very popular. Her numbers were very good. The effect of some of these ads is they're driving up her negatives, as they say. And those are harder to bring down. So we'll see what happens in 3 years.
Well, and I've heard again about the polls. The ad cited it and the email cites it. And yet, Norma, the coverage that I've seen, including Michael's coverage of these town hall meetings, show that, you know, a lot of people there were to support Senator Ayotte as well.
Well, I think that she's very principled on this issue. And I think people forget that New Hampshire is a extremely strong Second Amendment state. So I don't know who the polls are asking, you know, who's in these surveys, but I would venture to guess that she's not driving away any of the people who voted for her, or very few. It's an issue that Second Amendment, conservative Republican, that's who she is. And if it'll, you know, obviously 3 years is a long time, and there'll probably be other issues. Let's see what happens with mental health. What does she do on mental health between now and the election? Because if that's what she says is the direction the nation should go, then does she vote to spend money on mental health? She's been very conservative defender of defense and very conservative in other kinds of spending. Will she do something on mental health? That probably is going to be more of a telling key in this whole debate come 2016.
Well, and I've got, I guess I said, a lot of emails on this, and Senator Ayotte is not here, obviously, to respond to these emails. We've actually had a hard time getting Senator Ayotte on the program over the last 2 years, despite repeated efforts. We continue to try. I hope she'll come on, and maybe we can talk with her more about this. I wanted to ask you about a couple other stories, Michael Brindley, while we have you. There was a decision this week by a judge in the case of Steven Spader, who was involved in the murder of a Mount Vernon nurse and attempted murder of her daughter while they slept. This case horrified the state back in 2009. Steven Spader asked to have his case re-reviewed. Why?
Well, it was actually prompted by a U.S. Supreme Court decision that said because he was under the age of 17 or a minor when the crime occurred, he was granted a rehearing of his sentence. There was no question about the guilty verdict, but it was the question of whether the life in parole sentence was justifiable or allowed at the time. And so there was really never any thought anywhere along the process the process that he would get anything but the same sentence. But this was essentially a formality. He decided not to challenge it. He went forward. He told his lawyers not to present an argument. He presented an apology, which was not accepted by the family, and the judge stayed with the same sentence.
So there was a U.S. Supreme Court case that kind of changed the procedures, rules, and regulations around the treatment of minors.
It triggered a resentencing hearing for him. The guilty verdict was never in question. It was just a question of whether the life and parole sentence would stay. It did. There was nearly never any question that would change.
So he's there.
Correct.
And not getting
it. And that's done with.
Yeah. Okay. And I wanted to ask you about that, especially since before you came to us, you used to cover the Nashua area for the Telegraph of Nashua, and this was a huge case in that area.
It still is, and it really resonated with that town. That really was a dark time for that town.
Yeah, I remember that. Well, there's one more story that I wanted to ask you about, Michael, and you too, Norma and Gary. Memories of the day, Norma Love. 10 years ago, when New Hampshire's icon fell, I still miss him, the old man of the mountain.
Well, I remember getting a call saying, "Can you drive up there?" Because my car was in the shop and I couldn't go, but it was as I recall, it was a foggy day up there, and it sounded like a landslide to people. I'm just surprised that the old man held together for 10,000 years, because at the end, it was a lot of baling wire and glue and, effort by some people to maintain, a treasure of New Hampshire's. But nature's stronger than all of us.
It was sort of duct tape and paper clips for a long time, wasn't it?
For a long time.
Wasn't it, Nora? What do you remember, Gary?
Well, I'm a very rare person here. I'm actually from New Hampshire, and I was born and brought up here. And my grandmother lived in North Stratford, which is way up north. And as a child, we used to go back and forth, of course, all the time, because I lived around in the London area. I grew up there. And every time we'd go through the notch, we'd stop, we'd pull over, and we'd look up at the old man of the mountain. And it was just such a shock when I found out that the old man was no more. And I went up there once to look at it, maybe twice, and I really don't like going there anymore, because I like to remember it the way it was.
Mm, you're a traditionalist.
I am.
Yeah.
The viewing, I stopped to show someone there, have the viewing, you step back so many
yes.
feet. That's not that bad.
I think it's kind of cool, too, but I want to be respectful of Gary's feelings. And Michael, you covered this anniversary. What were people saying?
Pretty much the legacy lives on. There's no real question of, New Hampshire moving past the old man of the mountain anytime soon, I don't think. I think it's going to be here for a while on our state signs, on our license plates. I don't think anybody's going to make any kind of a push anytime soon to have a new symbol, despite the fact that it's gone. And I had never gone up to the site before after it collapsed, and I was able to try the profile of yours, and I agree. It's a good thing, because it doesn't – obviously rebuilding it was not really realistic or, And so the profile of yours gave you that sense of what it looked like. And actually, when I was there, there were some tourists who stopped and tried their hand at the profile of yours. Some had more trouble than others.
Yeah.
But
it's not quite obvious how you do
right.
it, but once you get it, it works.
But, I think 10 years later, I think it's pretty clear that the old man's not going anywhere in terms of the symbols in the state.
Yeah, hard to believe it's been 10 years. Where does the time go? Let's take another call if we could. The number here in the exchange for you to join our Friday New Hampshire News Roundup is 1-800-892-6477. Eva's waiting in Portsmouth. Hi, Eva. Thanks for joining us. Go ahead.
Hi, Laura. Thanks for taking my call.
Sure.
This morning on National Public Radio, Senator Ayotte was profiled, and they aired a clip from a town meeting she had in Fitzwilliam. And needless to say, both sides were very present in their opinion. But when she was questioned about her vote, she claimed that she was concerned about the creation of a national registry if gun owners were required to all have background checks. No matter how you feel about her and the legislation, that's deceptive because the law specifically states, or the proposed law specifically states, that a national registry, the creation of a national registry, would be a felony, federal felony, if that were done with the information. So what she said was deceptive. I think a lot of people don't know that, that that is part of the law. And I just want to put it out there that she told an untruth, and I think that bothers me more than anything.
Well, even
I'd love to hear the comments. Thank you.
Yeah, thank you for calling in. And I did hear a profile last night on All Things Considered where I think that was mentioned as well. Lots of coverage of this. Do you want to comment on her specifics, Michael, or...?
That's my understanding of the proposal as well. At least I attended the Tilton Town Hall, and what was interesting is that it actually never came up during the questions, despite the fact that it was clear that many of the people there were there because of that vote, either for or against. And that was one of the frustrations after the town hall meeting, was that it didn't come up. There was a process where people submitted their name and the topic they wanted to ask her about, and State Senator Jeb Bradley was the moderator. He said afterward he specifically chose not to choose gun questions because it came up during her PowerPoint presentation, but she answered questions on Benghazi, Social Security, immigration, gun control never came up. And there was a little bit of a scene at the end where a couple people held up signs. They were allowed to stay. They tried to approach the senator after and were blocked. But
Yeah, and it's been interesting, too, that some of the family members of the victims have come up to New Hampshire to try and get a word in with Senator Ayotte. From what I understand, sometimes they did, sometimes they didn't. Norma, you wanted to jump in real quick.
I think that that's always been a concern of gun rights advocates, no matter what bills proposed, because when we've debated them in our state house, it's always what happens to the information after you've taken it down and you've called it in. Do you destroy it or do you keep it? And the Second Amendment advocates say we don't need to have that stored anywhere. And I think there's that fear regardless.
Well, Eva, thanks a lot for calling in. And Michael Brindley, thank you for, again, giving us some of your time this morning. We appreciate it.
No problem at all.
Michael Brindley, newscast producer, reporter here at NHPR. After a short break, we'll continue getting your questions and comments on the news of the week here on the Friday New Hampshire News Roundup. The number is 1-800-892-6477.
This is NHPR, where support comes from UR members and Cole Gardens in Concord, helping families start edible gardens with herbs, vegetables, fruit trees, and advice, helping you decorate with living color online at colegardens.com. And from Dr. William Sutherland of Sports Medicine Atlantic Orthopedics of Portsmouth in York, whose recent public lecture on back and leg pain is available online at smao.org. Good morning, it's 9:40. This is NHPR.
We want you to be our newest Leadership Circle member. I'm Betsy Gardella, president of NHPR. The Leadership Circle helps fund the programs that capture the spirit of New Hampshire. As we approach the end of our fiscal year, Tillman Gerngross, Sylvia Richards, and Barbara and Dick Couch are challenging you to join the Leadership Circle. When you contribute $1,000 to NHPR by June 30th, they'll add $500 to your gift. Join our Leadership Circle at nhpr.org.
This is The Exchange. I'm Laura Kanoy. Today in The Exchange, it's our Friday New Hampshire News Roundup, and we want you to join our conversation, 1-800-892-6477, 1-800-892-NHPR. What are some of the topics that have been front and center in your mind this week as you read the news, listened to the radio, watched it on TV? What do you want to know more about in terms of some of the stories we've talked about, whether it's the latest on gambling in the House, the Senate slogging through the budget, Senator Ayotte's vote on background checks for guns, and some of the other issues that we've been covering? You can join us for sure, 1-800-892-6477. Email exchange at nhpr.org. And Gary and Norma, let's go back to our listeners and talk to Jan in Dover. Hi, Jan. You're on The Exchange. Thanks for being with us.
Hi. This is somewhat more lighthearted note. I know there's a bill that is making or is about to make its way through the legislature about making commemorative bottles of vodka for the old man on the mountain. And the proceeds for that, due to an obscure law, New Hampshire state law, will go, and this is the reason for the commemorative bottle, to historic preservation, in this case to the Civil War flags that are in the state house.
Oh, wow. Some of them are getting quite tattered, Jen.
Yes, they are. Yeah, and they have blood on them, which is makes them even more important.
Right.
So if you yourself want to know more about this, I can give you the name of the senator off air.
Okay. Jen, thanks a lot for calling. And I love this call, Gary, because this just shows you, you know, the many ways people are trying to hold on to how important the old man was.
Oh, it is. It's great. And there are all sorts of little things like this that come through the legislature all the time. And it's just a great it's what makes New Hampshire legislature the New Hampshire legislature.
All right. Well, thanks for the call, Jen. Again, the number 1-800-892-6477. I want to go over to the Seacoast now because there was a big story there this week, and talk to Chuck McMahon. He's a reporter for Seacoast Online, columnist for the Portsmouth Herald. And Chuck, thanks for being with us. We really appreciate it.
Oh, thanks for having me.
Well, 1st District Congresswoman Carol Shea Porter this week, Chuck, waded into, pardon the pun, the Great Bay, an incredibly contentious issue that's gone on for a long time there. Just first off, if you could, Chuck, just remind us what this is all about, why it's so tough.
Well, absolutely. Well, first off, you know, for those who aren't familiar with the Great Bay, it's a tidal estuary that's located in between, you know, Rockingham and Stratford counties in eastern New Hampshire, and it's about 6,000 acres of the tidal estuary that kind of runs into the Piscataquis River into Portsmouth. And the issue on the seacoast, and I'm sure all around the state, is about being able to come into compliance with these federal mandates for wastewater and stormwater runoff. And what we're finding here with these new EPA mandates and these permits, that they're going to be very, very costly to these communities. So Congresswoman Shea Porter was in town to talk with, you know, the public in a panel of environmentalists to discuss the future of the Great Bay.
Yeah, and I didn't really get a sense from doing the reading that I did that she came down one way or the other. She kind of just said, can't we all get along?
Well, you know, when it comes down to money and things in Washington, it's kind of it's you never know. And so I know that, you know, there really what we walked away from it was that, you know, there really is no guarantee of any federal funding to assist the communities along the Great Bay in meeting those federal mandates. And I mean, in Portsmouth alone, you know, the cost is going to be about $70 million to build a new wastewater treatment plant. In Exeter, it's going to be between $40 and $50 million to build a new wastewater treatment plant. So these are very big projects for these communities, and they're going to mean a lot of money that has to be raised from the tax base and through water and sewer bills.
Sure, and yet on the other side, we talked with Tom Burek yesterday, the commissioner of the Department of Environmental Services, and he said, "Look, the other side of this is Great Bay could die, just like the Chesapeake Bay."
Yeah,
and that's a cost too.
Well, you know, what they're saying is that the problem is that there's this increase in nitrogen in the Great Bay Estuary, and they're saying that's been, you know, the reason for the loss of eelgrass, which many say is, a critical habitat for fish and other marine species. So, the New Hampshire Department of Environmental Services and the EPA, you know, have identified that that nitrogen discharge is coming from not only wastewater treatment facilities along the estuary, but also from, you know, non-point sources such as septic systems, fertilizer and pet and livestock waste, not to mention stormwater runoff, which we all know is the rain. It rains and then it comes off on our impervious surfaces and it goes into our Great Bay.
Right, just rushes off the pavement because it doesn't get sucked up by ground and grass and so forth. So, what is the ultimate effect, if any, Chuck, of Carol Shea Porter again wading into this?
Well, I think that from our perspective here on the Seacoast, we've actually seen Congresswoman Shea Porter kind of dabble into many of the issues we have going on here, and this being her latest issue. She was here a few weeks ago to talk about the impacts of sequestration and the impacts of a new refueling tanker coming to the Seacoast. But this is her latest effort to, I think, kind of touch base with her constituency, and we'll see. I mean, I guess we have to kind of wait to see what she can do for us in Washington. And if she can restore funding or at least get us some more funding, she gave us a quote, it's my hope that Washington gets to the point where we all realize that these estuaries are natural treasures and that we have to invest in our coastlines. And she said, you know, we can't keep pushing this off. So hopefully she's heard from us. She knows that what we need, and she can go to Washington and make this happen.
So trying to get a little bit more funding, perhaps, to help the towns with the cost of these wastewater treatment
plant upgrades. A little bit more, yeah. I don't foresee there being a lot of funding.
Right. But, not in this era.
A little bit helps these days. Yeah, exactly.
All right. Well, Chuck, good to talk to you. Thanks a lot.
Thank you.
That's Chuck McMahon, again, reporter for Seacoast Online, columnist for the Portsmouth Herald. The number for you to join our New Hampshire News Roundup here on The Exchange on a Friday is 1-800-892-6477. Email exchange at nhpr.org. And Norma and Gary, here's an email from Liz in Londonderry on an issue I wanted to ask you folks about anyway. She says, I hope to learn more about the private prison issue. Is this more ALEC influence, that being the American Legislative Exchange Council, a conservative group, and how much influence is ALEC still having on our legislators? I think legislation for New Hampshire should be written in New Hampshire. Thanks for the show, as always. Thank you, Liz, for the email. Private prisons, Norma, this has come up this year in the State House.
Well, I'm not sure what ALEC would have to do with a bill to ban private prisons.
But then the Senate voted to, and it's hard to see, you're doing double negatives here. The House voted to kill any possibility of private prisons. Right. The Senate, as I understand, voted against that bill.
Right.
So now there is the possibility of private prisons.
But we don't have any private prisons, and the governor opposes it. So it was sort of a moot issue. And I think if there had been some proposal, it might have risen a little farther along in the debate. But because nothing was on the table, people, it's classic at the State House. Why are we dealing with this? I mean, why are we preventing something that isn't even out there? And I think what it triggered it was under Governor Lynch, they put out requests for proposals to see what could or could not be done. And Senate Finance Chairman Chuck Morris has an interest in knowing what could be done privately. They already have some functions that they do privately at the prison. It's like anything else. You contract out what you can.
Yeah, but housekeeping, meals, whatever.
Right. But there's a philosophical issue here, and that is if we're going to take people and charge and sentence them to a number of years or for life to a facility, does government have the responsibility to be the one in charge of their rehabilitation, or is it a matter of punishment or what? And the argument was private prisons, they make their money by filling beds, not by releasing prisoners back into the community who've been rehabilitated. So,
yeah, and that was interesting in the governor's race. Both Maggie Hassan and Over the Montaigne opposed private prisons for that reason.
Right, but you still have people who said, okay, let's hop on this. If they oppose it, let's get a bill to them that says we'll never have these things.
I see.
And got to the Senate, and the Senate said, well, there's nothing out there.
Well, what's interesting, too, and thanks again, Liz, for that email. What's interesting, too, Gary, about this email is it's part of a theme that we saw at the State House the past week, which is Senate turns back House bill on X fill-in-the-blank.
Oh, we can start down a list. Let's see. Stand your ground.
The House tried to repeal that. Senate said no.
Then we have decriminalization of marijuana, which the House approved by a large margin, and the Senate said no yesterday. Industrial hemp, the cultivation of industrial hemp, which the House approved, and the Senate said, we're going to study it for a year, which is essentially goodbye.
No. Yeah.
They did that before.
And then we had the liquid or chemical creation, which the Senate also said no thanks to after the House had passed. Ethanol, banning ethanol. The House wanted to ban ethanol, and the Senate said no to that, too. So we have a lot of those.
That's the theme, then. Norma.
Interestingly, about the Stand Your Ground vote, which is yet, and the Senate has yet to take it, I've talked to a couple of people, and so there are some Democrats who are going to join some Republicans in rejecting that, because as we were talking earlier about the Second Amendment, strength of the Second Amendment in New Hampshire, they're saying they see the handwriting on the wall. People don't understand what that bill would do or not do, and they don't want it. They want to be able to protect themselves. There's been a lot of misinformation about what would or wouldn't happen if it was repealed. So they're saying, no, thank you.
Yeah. So again, we're probably going to see more of this, Norma, right? House passes such and such, Senate says no.
Well, you have the House has got a slim Democratic majority, and the Senate has a 13-11 Republican majority. So there's going to be some agreement on some things. I think medical marijuana is one. If the Senate can come up with a bill that the House will accept, I understand that Governor Hassan opposes one provision in the House passed bill, which is that you could grow your own at home under certain circumstances. And I think she only wants it under what they call a pharmacy model, where you have centers, you go and buy it.
Yes. And we talked to her about that. I remember she had some concerns about that opening up, making things difficult for law enforcement, I think, was her
which is ironic because when she was in the Senate, she voted for it both ways.
Gary, did you want to jump in there?
Yes, sir.
Okay. Here's an email that just came in. She says the subject is New Hampshire legislature. Stella Tremblay, she's a Republican state representative. Jennifer from Stratum says, just want to comment about this embarrassment. I cannot believe that she was voted in. Now, for those who don't know what this is about, Representative Tremblay made some comments after the Boston Marathon bombing, saying that it was orchestrated by the U.S. government. Then she said some other things, including that that young man, Mr. Bauman, couldn't have been in pain, which was shocking to everybody because, you know, he was the poor gentleman who lost his legs, which is dreadful. His parents or his dad lives here in New Hampshire. She has resisted calls to step down, Representative Tremblay. Norma Love, without commenting on the specifics of this, this happens in the New Hampshire legislature. You've got 424 people, and sometimes some of them say things they shouldn't say.
Not only do they say things that maybe they shouldn't have said, or their party wishes they shouldn't have said, maybe they aren't ashamed of what they said, but you've got social media now, and so it gets out. I mean, Facebook, email, Twitter. We've had representatives, we had a representative of the party, Democrats, encouraged to resign for something he posted about Sarah Palin on Facebook. And he said he was misunderstood, but he did. But his name was on the ballot, and he was elected, and he's still serving. We've had people who were, whenever they came into the House, people would just get up and leave, or they would kill every piece of legislation they put through because they showed bias. So there's kind of a way of dealing with this in the House, and has been over the years, that when someone steps too far out of bounds, they get nowhere. They have no political capital. I have seen very few people forced out because of what I would say. I mean, we had someone this year because Stacey Lawton, because she was still in the gray area of whether she'd finish completing a sentence.
This is a Democratic state rep from
Nashua.
Right,
from Nashua. In cases where there's a legal issue, people are more likely to be, I don't say forced out, but strongly encouraged out. But
and sometimes they go, sometimes they
sometimes
don't.
Sometimes they don't.
And Representative Tremblay isn't going.
No, but people can say anything they want. It's a First Amendment right, and the party is embarrassed, and sometimes they prevail, and sometimes they don't.
And
Gary.
Ultimately, it's up to the people who put them in office whether they stay there or not. And that's the real test.
Well, and it is a bipartisan thing, as Norma said. Democrats and Republicans get in trouble. In this case of Tremblay, it's a Republican. Local headlines in Concord about a city councilor and state rep who's in trouble on a stalking charge. So it goes around and around, Gary, doesn't
sure.
it?
Does, it's not. No one party has claimed any of this. It cuts both ways across party lines.
I wanted to ask both of you about a national headline, but get your New Hampshire take on it. We all heard this morning the U.S. economy added 165,000 jobs in April. The unemployment rate ticked down to 7.5% from 7.6, so ticking down nationally. And yet, Gary, from what I understand, New Hampshire's rate, which won't be released for another week or two, keeps ticking up.
It does. I mean, and we were talking earlier about the revenues, and some of the strongest revenues we're seeing are the business taxes, and one of which is the BET, which is a pretty good indicator of employment and how well businesses are doing in a state, and that's going very well.
So obviously, that may be a sign.
Obviously, New Hampshire businesses are doing well. They're obviously not what they were before we had the Great Recession, but they're certainly doing much better than they were.
Norma?
I think people may not understand that New Hampshire typically does better at the start of a recession and comes out of it slower.
I see.
And part of that is our tax structure. Our states with income taxes typically see an impact right away. We have no general sales or income tax, so ours is kind of the opposite.
Yeah. Well, I wanted to close out with a question I always like asking you folks at the end of a roundup. And Gary, to you first, what are you especially going to be focusing on next week in your coverage?
Well, next week we have two things, again, budget and gambling. The subcommittees are going to be reporting to the super committee on gambling on Thursday. So that will be, they'll be laying out what their recommendations are going to be, such as changing the licensing fee and tax on gambling and things like that.
So these are the people who've been sort of diving into the weeds. Yes. They're going to give their thoughts to the bigger committee.
And then the bigger committee is going to decide what they're going to do and make a recommendation the week after that.
For the full House.
And then also next week on the same day, a Thursday, we have the budget hearings on the House budget before the Senate Finance Committee. So those are the two big things that are coming up next week.
Okay, great. Thanks for that. And Norma, real quick, what have you been watching?
Sitting right there next to Gary.
Covering the same things.
Mainly gambling, I think. The hearing is on the House budget. We've written quite a bit about that.
Okay. Both of you, thanks a lot for coming in. I really appreciate it. Thank you, Norma, for being here.
Thank you, Laura.
Norma Love, State House reporter for the Associated Press. Gary, good to see you. Thanks.
Good to see you. Thanks.
Gary Reno, State House reporter for the Union Leader and New Hampshire Sunday News. The Exchange is a production of NHPR. Our engineer is Dan Colgan. Our producer is Ellen Grimm. Our volunteer is Priscilla Malcolm. Our theme music was composed by Bob Lord. The Exchange's executive producer is Keith Shields, and I'm Laura Kanoy.
The views expressed in this program are those of the individuals and not those of NHPR, its Board of Trustees, or its underwriters. If you missed any part of today's program, listen to The Exchange anytime at nhpr.org.
Next week on The Exchange, we begin with a new book called Snob Zones, Fear, Prejudice, and Real Estate, which examines zoning policies and their impact on affordable housing in New England. Then another look at the Fourth Amendment and its provisions on search and seizure by law enforcement. And later, rising international worries over serious civil war and debate over how the U.S. should react. Email us at nhpr.org and join us all next week for The Exchange, every morning live at 9 and again at 8 p.m. here on NHPR.